Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Melvin Goodman, who is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His 42-year government career included service at the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, and in the U.S. Army. In 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials who testified before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as Director of Central Intelligence on the grounds that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. He's the author of Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA and National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism. And his latest article at Consortium News is Robert Gates's Narcissistic Duty. Welcome to Background Briefing, Melvin Goodman.
Hello, Ian. Good to be with you again.
So the new book by Robert Gates that has been previewed by the New York Times and the Washington Post, of course, we should make it clear that neither of us have read Duty, the memoirs of a secretary at war, because the book's not out yet. But there are pretty substantial excerpts in both the New York Times and the Washington Post. What's your initial response, Mel Goodman?
Well, my first reaction is this is just the kind of book that the Washington Press Corps loves, because it gives the appearance of being very vivid, very colloquial, very straight from the shoulder, almost as confession. But they don't bother to go beyond the appearance of frankness in terms of who Bob Gates really is, why does he go after Obama the way he does and ignores George Bush. After all, it was George Bush who made the original decision to abandon Afghanistan to go into Iraq, which most people who cover these issues carefully realize was the initial mistake in the handling of these two countries. The book is incredibly, judging from the reports we're getting, incredibly facile in the way it's presented and incredibly mean-spirited for someone who is pretending to be some kind of elder statesman, particularly in terms of the young people who dominated the Obama administration. And frankly, I can sympathize with Gates regarding the frustration of dealing with the people around Obama. But it was Obama who created this problem by reappointing Gates in the first place. And if Obama had the agenda we thought he did, which I think progressives and liberals supported, why in the world would he take someone like Bob Gates, who was wrong about every intelligence issue and political issue of the 1980s, who had very good credentials as a Cold Warrior, and make him his Secretary of Defense? So I think that was a very cynical move in the first place. And the irony to me in all of this is that he went after Joe Biden quite unnecessarily in the way he did it, very gratuitous, and claiming that he was wrong on every national security issue over the past four decades. Well, Bob's been wrong about most of the national security issues during the same period of time, and in the 1980s, he was wrong about all of the major intelligence issues of that time. So I'm looking forward to reading the book, and I must say the impression I'm getting is that I knew Bob very well in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He always had basset hounds, and he has all the virtues of a basset hound except loyalty. So I'm looking forward to the book.
So, Mel Goodman, one of the excerpts that Bob Woodward has written about in terms of Duty, Memoirs of a Secretary of War, Bob Gates's new memoir that has been previewed by both the New York Times and the Washington Post, Woodward describes the book as talking about how much Gates felt that the commander-in-chief was skeptical, if not outright convinced that the surge in Afghanistan wouldn't work. And in one meeting about Afghanistan in particular, Gates said that after listening to the president, he concluded, quoting, "The president doesn't trust his commander, can't stand Karzai, doesn't believe in his own strategy, and doesn't consider the war to be his." And you just pointed out that it was actually George Bush's war that he inherited, and that sort of set the disaster in motion. But when you listen to that or read that, frankly, to my mind, that actually makes Obama look good, because Karzai's clearly somewhat mentally disturbed narco-kleptocrat. We know that you can't trust these commanders because of the Rolling Stone article from the late reporter who wrote about them. And we also know that the surge didn't work and those lives and treasure were unnecessarily wasted. So I'm not sure what the basis of Gates's criticism is in the light of the reality of Afghanistan.
Well, my feeling about the Afghan war, the differences between Gates and Obama, turn on the fact that Obama made a huge mistake during the campaign in 2007-2008. He correctly said that Iraq was the wrong war, but he incorrectly said that Afghanistan was a war of necessity, which, of course, it wasn't. And I think I give Obama credit for coming into office in 2009, and the more he learned about Afghanistan, he came to the conclusion, correctly, that this was a fool's errand. And so he did something very close to what Mikhail Gorbachev did in Moscow in 1986-87. He said to the military, I'm going to give you one more year, and if you can't turn this war around, we're getting out. And I think Obama did something close to that when he went to West Point and gave that speech in December 2009, a speech that annoyed Bob Gates, and there are reasons for why it would annoy Bob Gates. But the fact of the matter is, he conducted a surge for a year and said he would pull those troops out after a year. And I think we learned that the surge didn't have a great impact on Afghanistan, and that Obama was committed to getting out, but he was getting tremendous resistance from the Pentagon, from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and now we know probably from Bob Gates. And I think what happened to Bob Gates is he took on the military mission much too personally. So instead of serving as a civilian Secretary of Defense, he became very sympathetic to the uniform view of Afghanistan, is that we could win if we had the will and were really willing to stay over the long term in this fight in Afghanistan. And Obama was not willing to do that. So, as you say, I think if people read this carefully, Obama will come out of this looking pretty good, and so will Biden, because, as Gates said, Biden was probably whispering in Obama's ear about, we have to get out of this. This is a losing cause. And again, Biden is right about that. Gates is wrong. And I think Obama was rolled by the military. And reading between the lines of the various excerpts, I think Gates was representing too closely the views of the Joint Chiefs of Staff instead of being an independent civilian Secretary of Defense. His emotional involvement with Afghanistan and with the troops is rather stunning to me of everything I've read about the book, because I first met Bob in the 1960s. We were rather close friends until our parting in the 1980s, and I can tell you this is one very cold person. So this emotional involvement comes as a bit of a shock to me as someone who was very dispassionate about all aspects of his life, both personal and professional. But I'll grant that this emotion is sincere, and I think Bob does deserve credit for doing something that Donald Rumsfeld wouldn't do. Donald Rumsfeld had that famous line about you go to war with the equipment that you have and not what you would like to have. But it was Bob who made the decision to invest in these mine-resistant, ambush-protecting vehicles, the so-called MRAPs, that went downrange to the troops and saved a lot of lives. And Bob does deserve credit for that. But on the politics of the war and the politics and policies of national security, Bob was simply wrong, just as he was wrong in the 1980s in supporting Bill Casey's views that led to the politicization of intelligence on behalf of the Reagan administration.
Again, I'm speaking with Melvin Goodman, who's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His 42-year government career included service at the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, and the U.S. Army. In 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials to testify before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as Director of Central Intelligence on the grounds that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. He's the author of Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA, and National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism. And his latest article at Consortium News is Robert Gates's Narcissistic Duty. So at the time that you testified against Robert Gates before the Senate confirmation, that was the second time around for Robert Gates being nominated to head up the CIA, first by Ronald Reagan in 1987, and that essentially got shut down by the Senate. and then Reagan's successor, President George H.W. Bush, in 1991, renominated him, and he attracted a lot of negative votes, 31 from the Senate, which is an all-time record for the confirmation of a CIA director. So you were not alone in being skeptical about Robert Gates.
No, I think what's interesting about the appointments in 87 and 91 is that there was one chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee during that period, David Boren, and it was David Boren who called Bob Gates at home after his first day of testifying before the committee for confirmation, and David Boren was very honest and candid with Bob, and he said, "We do not believe you with regard to your lack of any information or participation in Iran-Contra." In fact, David Boren even called the Iran-Contra investigator, Walsh, to find out if he was going to be indicted. And Walsh was accumulating evidence, but he had bigger fish to fry, so he made it clear he probably wouldn't be indicting Bob Gates. But the fact is the committee didn't believe him, and they shouldn't have believed him because he was lying about Iran-Contra. And, of course, in 1991, he was accused by me and others of politicization of intelligence, and he lied in explaining a lot of that issues. And he not only attracted more negative votes in the Senate in the vote for confirmation, but it was more negative votes than all of the CIA directors, the 23, 24 CIA directors going back to 1947 attracted in the last, you know, five, six decades. So Bob has never established a record of credibility or integrity, and that's why people should read this memoir very carefully. And I know from the excerpts I've seen, he is being extremely deceitful in the way he addresses the Iraq surge, which he claims to have supported. Well, the fact of the matter is he came to the Bush administration from the Iraq Survey Group, where there was a consensus to get out of Iraq. He was very leery about the idea of a surge and finally supported very small numbers, a very limited surge, but came around to the larger figure that George Bush gave. And what's stunning about the memoir in this respect, apparently, is that he's very generous with George Bush. And, of course, it was the Bush family that made him. The Bush family made him CIA director. The Bush family made him the director of the Bush Institute at Texas A&M. And I think the Bush family is responsible for the fact he was president of Texas A&M. And, of course, it was George W. Bush who brought him back to Washington as the Secretary of Defense. So he's not going to antagonize George Bush. And it's interesting that I think he's pretty careful with Hillary Clinton, because if I know Bob, who always has his eye on the future, he's not going to burn bridges to someone who may be the candidate for the Democratic nomination for president in 2016, and maybe even the president in 2016. So Bob is careful never to close any doors in his future. He's never done that. I mean, this is the classic political windsock who always blows with the prevailing winds, and the prevailing winds now suggest that don't antagonize the Bush family, because Jeb Bush could be the Republican candidate. I think he's probably too moderate for the Republican Party, but he will be a respectable and respected candidate. And Hillary Clinton certainly seems to have the Democratic nomination if she wants it. And this is the way Bob has always conducted himself. He is the most ambitious person I've met in my close to 50 years in Washington, and extremely hardworking. So you can never sell this guy short.
Well, with Governor Christie's problems now, Jeb Bush is actually looking pretty good as a Republican presidential prospect. And I'm sure this new book by Bob Gates, Duty, won't hurt his chances at all, because it essentially trashes Democratic foreign policy. But back to the real issues about how much Gates got his central issue wrong, and he was, after all, one of the senior CIA criminologists. That was his expertise. He believed up until the end, as the place is falling apart, that the Communist Party will continue to remain untouchable and untouched. He had run-ins with both Secretaries of State George Shultz and James Baker, who felt that he was undermining their foreign policy in terms of of working with Gorbachev, and it was pretty clear that President Reagan did an about-face, particularly after the 1983 war scare, and really reached out. And when a year later, when in 85, when Gorbachev showed up on the scene, he had somebody to work with. And Reagan worked extremely hard to end the Cold War with Gorbachev. But then when Reagan's successor, President George H.W. Bush, got in, there was an enormous amount of foot-dragging and skepticism about whether Gorbachev was for real and these changes that were absolutely, you know, the beginning of the end of the Soviet Union were for real. So he really, I think, missed the boat on one of the biggest historical changes, since World War II.
Well, as you indicate, he missed all of those issues. He had the wrong answers on all of the key intelligence questions about who was Gorbachev. Was Gorbachev serious? Could Gorbachev make a difference? Was Gorbachev interested in detente? Was he interested in arms control? Gates was wrong about all of that, and as late as 1989, 1990, he was still testifying to the Congress that don't fall for this guy, Gorbachev. He's not going to change the Communist Party. He's not going to change the Politburo, and the dictatorship of the proletariat is going to remain the same. And he couldn't have been more wrong. You know, in 1992, when Bill Clinton was elected, Bob Gates went on a huge campaign to be kept on as CIA director. This isn't widely known. And he even made it clear to the Clinton people that he would remain just for a year, for a transition period, you know, knowing that if he made it for a year, he'd probably be appointed for the duration. And it was Senator Bill Bradley who was opposed to the Gates nomination in 1991 and led the opposition in the Senate Intelligence Committee against Bob Gates, who went to Bill Clinton and gave him the reasons, the rhyme and verse of why you shouldn't keep Bob Gates on, that this was a cold warrior who can't be trusted, who has no record in terms of integrity in the handling of intelligence. So the good news was that Clinton didn't keep Bob Gates, but of course the bad news was he turned around and appointed someone who was even less predictable than Gates, and of course that was Jim Woolsey.
So just in closing, Mel Goodman, what's your sense then of the relevance of what we're talking about here in terms of Gates' history in missing the end of the Cold War and his tenure? Because it seems to me that this book explodes his central asset, which is that he's supposed to be bipartisan and discreet and not telling tales out of school. And this book is, maybe he's trying to sell books like, you know, which is perfectly understandable, but it feels like, you know, he's sort of broken his own record of discretion.
Well, I think there's a level of meanness in the book that I think is going to hurt Bob Gates. I think Bob Gates was establishing himself as sort of the elder statesman of the very youthful Obama administration, because Obama had surrounded himself on national security issues with people such as Ben Rhodes or Tom DeMille, who didn't have a lot of experience in international security. So therefore, there was some deference toward Bob on that level. And of course, Hillary Clinton wasn't going to take any risk as Secretary of State because she has her eye on a larger target. And she acquiesced in dealing with Bob Gates and let him take the lead not only on issues involving the military, but on diplomatic issues as well. So I think when people look at this book and they look at the lack of gratitude in terms of Bob Gates's mentors and his patrons, what I would hope is they'll take a harder look at Bob Gates, because to me he's the same person he was in the 1980s when he distorted intelligence on behalf of Bill Casey and the Reagan administration. This is a man who's always looked out for himself, who's always gone with the prevailing winds, and in this case it was the prevailing winds at the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs of Staff that were important to him. And toward the end, it's very interesting to me, before he left the Obama administration in 2011, all of his advice on key issues simply was not taken, on the handling of General Stanley McChrystal and the insubordination of McChrystal, on the level of troops we should apply to Afghanistan, to whether we should go after Osama bin Laden in Pakistan. He was opposed to that raid. And I think for a lot of people in the Obama administration who were trying to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was that incredibly cynical and callous policy of the Clinton administration in the 1990s, Bob Gates was, on behalf of the military, was dragging his heels on that one as well. So my guess is when he left in 2011, they were probably glad to see him go. And I think Obama must have serious regrets about ever appointing Bob Gates in the first place.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Melvin Goodman.
Thank you, Ian. Good to be with you, as always.
Again, I've been speaking with Mel Goodman, who is a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and an adjunct professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. His 42-year government career included service at the CIA, State Department, Defense Department, and the U.S. Army. In 1991, he was one of three former CIA officials to testify before the Senate against the nomination of Robert Gates as Director of Central Intelligence on the grounds that he had slanted intelligence to suit policy. He's the author of Failure of Intelligence, The Decline and Fall of the CIA and National Insecurity, The Cost of American Militarism. And his latest article at Consortium News is Robert Gates's Narcissistic Duty. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the capital flight of the elite out of Afghanistan.